The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
I think I have a good idea what it is. I'm not going to share because I don't want to get in trouble. I'm only sharing the facts. I think that's the most fair thing to do right now. And the news that we do know is that earlier this afternoon, while we were on the air, Jerry Jeudy was arrested by the Arapahoe County Police. He is currently being booked, and once he is booked, hopefully I have that information as quick as possible.
So I don't know what the charge is or what's going on. The time of the day would lead me to think it was similar in nature to Bradley Chubb, right?
Like
it's a traffic incident. You were driving 40 miles per hour.
Let's not speculate on KKFN and KKFN HD1 Walmart Denver.
Who knows? I was speculating.
This could be anything. I mean, who knows? It could be something very minor. I don't know if the time of day, like what that has to do with a lot. I mean, like you can cancel a few things, but still, there's a lot of serious things that could be brought to you happened in the middle of the day. So
no, you can do really bad things in the middle of the day. There's no question. It just seems like the more serious offense, generally speaking, later on.
Sure. Right? Yep. Or, this is just in general. I'm casting a very wide net. There could be a scenario where they have been wanting to reach Jerry Jeudy in the last 24 hours and finally contact with him, you know, this afternoon.
Yeah.
So
regardless,
not good.
It's certainly not, you know, good. You don't want to be in the news for something like this, even if it turns out to be as minor of a thing as could possibly be. It's just another thing we look at with Jerry Jeudy where we say, hey, we're talking about the wrong things.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And it just is it's a recurring pattern. Again, even if it turns out to be the most minor of all minor things that you could possibly be arrested for, it certainly isn't. Certainly isn't why he wants to be in the news, needs to be in the news, or any of that kind of stuff. So
I'm almost hesitant to let Zach leave because I know that he's working on get this thing confirmed. But maybe we get you to jump back on or something if you do get it confirmed.
Yeah, maybe so. And I just want to emphasize on the way out, like, and I already said this, but I'm going to say it again because I'm getting a lot of hate right now, like online. When you put yourself and you know when you put this out there, I am just getting, you know, all types of stuff said to me. But I just want to emphasize that I never go looking for this stuff.
Yeah.
When it's delivered to my doorstep, I'm going to share it and try to share it in the most fair way possible. This is not pile-on time or anything like that. I had unique information come to my doorstep, and I followed up, did a little bit of homework with a contact that I know that is close to the Arapahoe County, you know, Sheriff's Office, and I'm sharing what I know. Well, yeah. I am not a newsbreaker, but once in a while, I break news when it friggin' falls into my lap like an anvil. So
what are they upset with you about? What are you supposed to do? Act like it didn't happen? Ignore it? I mean, it's not like you were hanging out in bushes and you know, trying to snoop and get something. Like,
yeah, well, it's not about Zach. It's not unique to him. People just don't want stuff to be true. And so whenever they hear something like this that does not have all the details, they're always like, oh, well, you should have held off until you had all the details. Well, here are the details that we know. He is currently being booked.
Which is news. The fact that Jerry Jeudy's been arrested and is being booked, news.
Yeah, right. So you haven't presented it as something that it's not. You've just presented it as what it is. But people, they don't want their heroes to have bad things happen. So they want Zach to be wrong, right? They want whoever breaks the news to be wrong. It's not about Zach. It's just whoever the person is that puts that information out there.
Yeah, the bearer of bad news is the one that's going to take the arrows. But yeah, I mean, it certainly is newsworthy. It's breaking as we're on the air. We'll bring more details throughout the drive as the show goes on, as they come in. The other breaking news today, Tyler, and this will happen, I'm sure we'll get more leaks as the show goes on, and then right at the end of the drive is when NFL goes live with the schedule for 2022. Broncos at Seahawks, Monday Night Football. Now, back the day the trade had happened, when Russell Wilson was coming to the Broncos, when Zach got all excited and said it's not a drill, I said they're going to be the Sunday night opener.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson returns to Seattle. It just seemed too perfect. Close, but it's Monday night.
I said the same thing. I thought it'd be Sunday night because it had to be a primetime game. It's a big opportunity. And by the way, it might only be a big national story in week one. In week 3 in week 4, the Seahawks might suck by then. And once the Seahawks have got a bad record, well, now all of a sudden it's not as compelling when Russell Wilson goes back to Seattle and he goes back to his home turf. But when you've got for the first game that Russell Wilson has ever played and it's back in that stadium, that's nuts, man. I mean, I had that happen to me. I'm not Russell Wilson. I was just a local undrafted guy that happened to make the team. But my first game after I'd left the Broncos, I got traded out to Seattle. There was a little pit stop in between there. I won't even go into the details, but I ended up traded to Seattle. In like 9 or 10 days later, I was starting at Mile High Stadium in week 1 as a member of the Seattle Seahawks. Now, that was wild for me, but mainly wild because I was just this hometown guy. Denver, right? I mean, but for Russell Wilson to go back there, that is a compelling national storyline. It might not be compelling in week 8, though, if the Seahawks aren't good.
Sure. No doubt. And you know, it's just the odds of it happening, right? If it's an interconference game, they play in Seattle, what, every 8 years or whatever it turns out to be. It was on the list of opponents for this year when you looked at it and said, well, you know, the Broncos are going back to Seattle at some point this season. It makes sense that they would want to make the most of that. The league would. It would be a big-time story at the beginning of the year. And you're right. You get to week 3 or 4, you get into October, and you look up and like, Geno Smith stinks, or may even be, Drew Lock stinks.
Yeah.
And this team is bad. That takes away some of the sizzle from that game.
The big sizzle is Russell Wilson's first game as a Denver Bronco is in Seattle. Are you kidding me? How could it get any bigger than that? I mean, in terms of national storylines, you could find more competitive battles. You could find the best teams in the league to face off against one another. Bills, Rams. That's certainly a more compelling competitive game. But this is the most interesting storyline in the NFL. I know this. I'm gonna have to buy tickets. I just texted my wife. I just said, hey, look into the tickets. Already promised my son I'd take him out there because everybody already knows the story, but diehard Seahawks fan. So I'm gonna be going out for it. I hope as a station we're going out. I think it's gonna be incredible. There'd be a sponsor that would be smart to, sponsor that one, right? Because that's a huge, huge deal.
So just to reiterate, it's Monday, September 12th, week 1, Broncos at the Seahawks. It is the lone Monday night game that week. There's only one Monday night game week 1. There's 2 in week 2.
Yeah.
So the Broncos.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I didn't want to be the late one.
Yeah, because that's getting buried. And to me, that's worse than being like the national game on Sunday afternoon. Like that's a 10 o'clock kickoff back east. They're not going to bury Russell Wilson's return to Seattle in that time slot. It's the lone Monday night game. It's a big deal for the new Monday Night Football crew and kind of the refresher of that. Makes me wonder if it'll be a Manning cast. That could be a fun one.
I'm sure it will be.
Because Russell was a great guest this year. He was on twice.
He was. You know what? I think this is a dream scenario all the way around. It's a compelling storyline for everybody, not just for Denver. It's a compelling storyline for Seattle. It's a compelling storyline for NFL fans. But for the Broncos, you know, I heard Stokely talking about it on their show a little bit earlier, and he was like, hey, bring on the big dog. Week 1, I want the big dog. I'm like, forget that. I don't want to play the Chiefs in week 1. I don't want to play one of the best teams in week 1. What happened with Peyton Manning in his first year? It took 4 or 5 weeks for them to gel before they were starting to really click. I would say bring on the big dog if I didn't feel like the Broncos were going to be a good football team down the road, because you might be able to sneak one out. You might be able to get lucky in week 1. Maybe they're rusty. But I've got nothing but faith that the Broncos are going to be a good football team by the time you get to the second half of the season. So I want the best opponents then in season. So I think the Seahawks are not going to be a great opponent. You're going up against a team that is, they're reinventing themselves. And the only thing that could make it any more compelling, honestly, is if Drew Lock is the starter.
Oh, that would make it fantastic. And not just because I like to joke around and you guys like to give me a hard time. That would be fantastic. Geno Smith is like, eh. But if it's Drew Lock, that'll be must-see TV for even more reasons. Real quick, thanks to our listeners in Littleton for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. If it's Russell Wilson versus Drew Lock, that's Drew Lock's Super Bowl.
Hot take. It's not Tuesday, it's Thursday, but a hot take Thursday for you. If Drew Lock were to beat Russell Wilson in week 1, the Seahawks would feel like they won the trade.
Yeah,
they would be the talk. They would be like, "That's it. Like, that's all we need to know. We did what we needed to do. Number one, Drew Lock, you're the hero. You're the savior. We got our guy. That's why we didn't want you anyways, Russell Wilson. So that game is going to be a Super Bowl for a lot of people out there in Seattle. And you know what else? It's different. Like when I know that Peyton went back to Indianapolis twice when he was with the Broncos. I wasn't there the first time. I was there the second time. And it was supposed to be an amazing story because he was going to break the all-time passing record yeah. in Indianapolis. All we needed to do was get off the field on defense and a key poked him in the eye and it didn't end up working out. But that was not a contentious environment. That everybody in Indianapolis loved Peyton. They were praising him. I mean, they were cheering him. There wasn't a boo in that stadium. There's going to be a lot of boos out there in Seattle for Russell Wilson.
You think so?
Heck yes.
When I was there this past December, and they weren't having a very good year, they were playing the Niners, and you know, there was a lot of, you know, contention about hey, what's wrong with the Seahawks and all that kind of stuff. But I heard no talk about it's a Russell Wilson problem. It was
yeah,
Pete
because
Carroll,
he was still
it was
their
the
guy
offensive
then.
Coordinator. It was so you think this spin?
What are the Seahawks selling right now out there?
Is it Russell Wilson's the bad guy?
That Russell Wilson
everybody.
Wanted out of town. We didn't want to do this.
They're going to buy that narrative.
Well, yes, they will because fans want to believe that their team they're going to be in denial. They're going to believe for maybe a year, maybe half a season, that they could actually rebuild. They're going to believe that it was actually Pete Carroll and not Russell Wilson. And so they'll buy into it. Eventually, reality will set in, but it won't set in by week one.
You're right. The most hostile that'll be is week one.
Yeah.
Because if you get to week eight, week nine, right, and the Seahawks are 2-6 and Drew Locke is playing terrible, people are just going to be looking at – they're going to be mad at John Snyder and mad at Pete Carroll. They're not going to be mad at Russell Wilson. Week one, they still have hope,
right?
They still think they might win this trade. So,
dude, I'm just thinking about all the possibilities that be going on here, and we've talked about this a lot around here. And I know you hate it, the video montages. What does Seattle do? They are they going to honor Russell Wilson in his very first game? It's back in their own stadium. Are they going to put up a video montage of Russell Wilson? What they have to, right?
I think you have to. Yeah, I think you have to.
That
it's
is
the,
brutal.
But it's the season opener. It's Monday Night Football. He's coming back. I think you have to do it. I will say this though, as a Broncos fan, it worries me. Just because, look, the NFL in general, we all try to pick the games on a weekly basis, just picking winners,
and
it's tough. There's no bigger crapshoot than week one.
No.
Week one is when all sorts of strange things happen, and you see teams that, wasn't it a couple of years ago, the Jaguars won week one and didn't win a game the rest of the year, so crazy things can happen in week
one. The Chiefs have been bad in the early parts of the season many times.
Would it shock you if Denver went into Seattle and got beat. Drew Locke beat Russell Wilson week one at Seattle. Wouldn't shock me in the least.
No, it wouldn't shock me. Unfortunately, I do think that the first 4 or 5 weeks, it's going to take some time for these guys to gel. And that's going to be a loud place to play, man. I know that crowd very, very well. That is the loudest stadium in the NFL, and it's not even close. And so, yeah, they could have enough of a home field advantage that they could pull one off against the Broncos in week one. If they played in week eight, I think the Broncos would crush it.
Agreed. I think it's worst case scenario in terms of Denver from a competitive standpoint of when they're going back to Seattle, but it makes all the sense in the world. The NFL doesn't miss many marketing opportunities.
So
you knew they were going to get this one. So we know week one. We know week 16. We know where they're going on October 30th. We'll see if we can fill in some of the other blanks as we get ready for the NFL schedule to come out. Coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbis here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
James Mallett from DenverFan.com in for D-Mac. Tyler Palumbis is here. Tyler, the news keeps coming in, so just for those of you who are just joining us, Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office has told folks that Broncos wide receiver Jerry Jeudy was arrested today around noon. No charges have been filed yet. That's coming. And according to other reports that we're getting and that we're seeing, Jeudy did not turn himself in this situation. deputies went and arrested him. So we're continuing to piece things together here. That doesn't sound good.
No, on the surface, that does not sound good. And to be clear, this is all speculation at this point because we don't know the specifics. We've heard a few rumors, but there's nothing that has been confirmed. So there's certainly nothing that we can run with at this point. But if I heard that, well, I don't know. I guess I could see that going either way. I mean, when you say he didn't turn himself in, okay, that sort of implies that they went out looking for him. Or it could be something. I mean, seriously, what if it was like a Bradley Chubb deal?
Chubb didn't turn himself in.
What if he was driving 40 miles per hour over the speed limit?
Correct. Right? It could be that. It could be that where he got stopped and there was a bench warrant or whatever. I believe that's the term for it. That was out for his arrest, and he got arrested. So it could be that as well.
On the surface, the verbiage of that does not sound great, though.
Correct. That's how I'm reading between the lines as well. But we are reading between the lines as we continue to gather more information. Our own Zach Bye during Stokely, and Zach was the first to break the news. He's continuing to work on it for us. So as things develop, we will be sure to bring it to you. Other news, Broncos-related, that came out today. Our Broncos insider, Mike Kliss, is reporting that media tycoon and entertainer Byron Allen and his group is one of the five candidates still remaining to buy the Broncos. Allen will visit the Broncos facility soon. According to sources, Allen is backed by a handful of investors. So we knew it was Robson Walton, right? He was in it. Josh Harris and Todd Boehly, they had been kind of rumored to be the three of the five finalists. We didn't know who the two mystery finalists were. Byron Allen and his group now one of those two. Just my first reaction to this, Tyler, when I hear that, just based on what we heard was Byron Allen's net worth, which is a ton of money. It was like $400-500 million. But
yeah, I thought it was even less than that, to be honest. Now I'm looking at like celebritynetworth.com.
Right.
So clearly I've got no clue what his actual net worth is, but I saw like 250.
So when you hear that number, like to most of us in the real world, that's a crazy number.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at it with the contenders to buy the Broncos, and you hear, you know, Robson, and he's worth $70 billion, you look at that and say, well, man, that's got to price out Byron Allen and his group. But we don't know who all is in his group at this point. So maybe there's some big money guys in there. Obviously, there are. Does that surprise you that he's still in the running here, still in contention?
Absolutely. 100% surprises me. Number one, I mean, I've got a little side coffee bet with D-Mac that, you know, there were reports that came out last week that it was down to the final two. That immediately got denied, and it was said, no, there's going to be about five groups that come into town. They're going to visit the Broncos. This is definitely not down to two groups at this point in time. But I took a little side coffee bet with D-Mac. Watch, there's not going to be five that end up coming because, in my opinion, what I thought was going to happen, and maybe I'm going to end up being wrong on this, but I thought as soon as you saw Robson Walton was involved, if you're Byron Allen, you're sitting there, you're worth $250, $300, maybe $400 million. You see the Robson Walton has already got an offer out there over $4 billion. He's already been into town. He's worth over $70 billion. Are you really going to go through with that? I would think there's going to be a couple of groups that are just going to fall out and be like, hey, can't be a part of that. Byron Allen was the first name that I thought would fall out because he just isn't worth the same amount of money. Now, obviously, he's got a bunch of rich friends, and obviously, he's got a group, he's got a network that he feels like he can put together that money. He tried to buy Tegna a couple months back. That deal did not go through. That was way more expensive than Denver Broncos going to be. So
he's got the ability to round up the money. If he's able to put that deal together, he can round up the money to put the Broncos deal together.
Yes. I will say on the surface, though, and this has nothing to do with Byron Allen, this would be true of anybody. Take the name out of it. That scares me. The idea of the lead owner of the Denver Broncos being so reliant on so many other people, right? Because then you're talking about penny pension. You're talking about a whole bunch of different voices that are going to have different opinions, that are going to have a heavily influenced vote on the situation. I like the idea of a rich dude that has got the ability to just write a blank check and he doesn't have to worry about paying off investors.
I think I do too, but and I've heard you and D-Mac talk about it a couple of times. I wrote a column for DenverFan.com last week about how I think it's a silly story. I think it's one of those that we talk about it a lot and we break this down when someone's coming into town, but I think it's kind of meaningless, and here's why. there is nothing more important than who buys the Broncos in terms of the next 30 years, right? Like, if it's the wrong owner, if it's a Daniel Snyder type, it could set this franchise on a bad trajectory. If it's a great owner, it puts them on a great trajectory, right? If it's Robert Kraft 2.0, well, awesome. Then they're going to be set up and it's going to be all about winning. My issue with it is we don't know anything about these candidates, right? So I heard D-Mac say, we don't know anything about draft picks when we talk about it. Yeah, we do. We've watched them play. We know what kind of players they were at, you know, Florida or Georgia or wherever they happen to play college football. We know what the Broncos' needs are. And, hey, they need a tight end. And Greg Dulcich, he could fill that void. Like, we can make some educated assessments of it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what any of these guys' plans are. We barely know what their net worths are. We're just kind of guessing to some extent. So, yeah, Robson Walton is worth a ton of money. But does that mean he's going to come in and, you know, build a new stadium out by DIA and he's just going to have an open checkbook and they can sign whoever they want in terms of free agents because cash isn't going to be an issue anymore, even though you got to operate it within the cap. Cash is still kind of king. We don't know any of that.
No.
So it makes it to where it's like, wake me up when it's over and tell me who got it, because, A, we don't have any say in it.
Yeah.
Which fans and media can have a say in some things, right? Like, Vic Fangio probably didn't get a fourth year, at least in part, because that would have been tough to sell to the fan base.
Yeah,
right?
maybe.
So I just think it's one of those of, like, we don't know what any of these guys' plans are. We're having to guess. And that makes it to where, it's difficult to get too into it. I do think, though, we can talk about, like, what kind of an owner you would want.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about how you don't want a guy who's coming in kind of having to scrape it together. I think I'm on the other side of this of that coin, because I look at a guy like Jerry Jones, who bought the Cowboys, put everything he had into it. Like, if that didn't work, he was going broke,
mm-hmm.
right? And they were losing $1 million a month, which now in the NFL doesn't sound like much. But back then, 30 years ago, that was a ton of money.
Right.
And he had to make it work. I don't know if you've been watching the series Winning Time on HBO, but Dr. Jerry Buss, when he bought the Lakers, like,
he had to make it work.
He didn't have anywhere money to do it, and he had to make it work.
I think those days have just come and gone, though. I understand what you're saying. Like you're going to be all in. This is going to be your life. This is going to be, you're moving here. You're spending every day at the office. You got to make it work, because if it doesn't work, you're going belly up, right? I certainly understand that. I think those days have come and gone, though. I think the money is just too big. I literally don't think you could survive in this business today like Pat Bowlen did. And you know, so you're right. We don't know anything about these guys. And I certainly don't want Dan Snyder. So it's not like the richest dude solves everything. But given the fact that we don't know anything, hey, Byron Allen could be a fantastic owner. He could be a terrible owner. Robson Walton could be a fantastic owner. He could be a terrible owner. I don't know whether they're going to be good or bad. All I know is what I know. And what I know is about the money. And so when I look at it on the surface, I just say, I don't know, man. I know what it's like. I've been on the teams that penny pinch. I've been on the teams that don't give you the good meals. I've been on the teams that the travel is just miserable. I've been on the teams where you have to have a roommate on the road. All that stuff, it doesn't sound like a big thing. It adds up over time towards your quality of life, and quality of life, that absolutely impacts your performance on the field.
No doubt. I just think, like, I look at it and I don't think I want an owner who owns other teams, right? And I look at the situation we have here in Denver, and people are going to laugh at this because the Nuggets are good. The Avs are, you know, arguably the best team in the NHL right now, and say, what's your issue with Kroenke? I don't want to have an owner, when you go to the game and you look at the owner's box, it's dark. There's nobody up there. I don't want an owner that just comes in every once in a while, looks at a spreadsheet. Hey, are we in the red? Are we in the black? And then gets back on their private jet and goes off to wherever they're going to go. Where it's just an asset on in their portfolio.
Right.
Because I think if you have to show up every day, if Stan Kroenke had to show up at the office every single day and look at his employees who are having to suffer with the fact that those teams aren't on television and haven't been on television for 3 years, it would be different than when he can just get on an airplane and go somewhere else and doesn't have to deal with it.
And you can simplify that a little bit more. Hey, everybody's got a favorite, right? Everybody's got a favorite business. Rich guys have got their favorite business. If you own multiple teams, you're going to have a favorite team. You're going to have a team that you spend a little bit more time on. And it's really, really simple. If the Denver Nuggets or the Colorado Avalanche, even those two teams were Kroenke's only two professional teams, there's 0% chance that this TV blackout has gone on this long.
I'm with you.
Because it's his entire focus, right? Now, they're good teams. So I can't argue the fact that he's found a way to produce good teams and have environments where they are producing and they're competing at a high level.
They're good at the moment, right?
Sure.
But if you go over the 20 years that he's owned the Avs, they've had more bad seasons than good seasons.
Well, it's been 21 years since they've been out of the second round for the Avalanche.
Right. So that he bought the team, they won the Stanley Cup. They haven't been out of the second round since then.
Yeah.
Right? The Nuggets have been to the Western Conference Finals twice during that time.
Yeah, that's fair.
Once with
Melo,
once in the bubble. So it's like, how much success have they had?
Yeah.
But I guarantee you they've been in the black every single year. That's for sure.
Right,
so
right.
I don't want a guy who has two priorities that say, hey, we want to make money and we want to win, and they're in that order. I think it needs to be flip-flopped. All right, it's a big breaking news day. Byron Allen still in contention to buy the Broncos. Jerry Jeudy has been arrested by the Arapahoe County Sheriff. We're efforting more information on that story. And the Broncos schedule comes out at 6 o'clock today. We've got a couple of pieces of information. We'll try and fill in some of the rest of the gaps coming up next.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Tyler, it's NFL schedule release day. I always find it interesting. It's the day when you'll hear a lot of people and see a lot of people in this business on Twitter kind of making, you know, quips about it, jabs about it, of like, hey, they're going to play 17 games and 9 of them are going to be on the road and at home, like kind of making fun of it and mocking people who get into it. I get into it. I think it's exciting because it basically maps out my fall and winter, right? Like, that's what I'm going to do for 17 weeks of 18 when you count the bye. Here's where I'm going to be. Here's when I have to work. Here's when I'm off. Whenever the Broncos have their bye week, that's always the guy's trip to Vegas. Like, there's all those sort of things, right?
Right,
like,
right.
And then I start looking at it and going through the schedule and saying, okay, and I did this, I think it was 3 years ago, Broncos played at Lambeau. And, okay, going to Lambeau Field to watch a game, bucket list kind of a thing. And the fact that it was the Broncos, all right, got to try and make that happen. But then it's, well, what college game is nearby and can you combine them?
Yeah.
So that year I did Michigan at Wisconsin on Saturday. Then we drove to Green Bay, did Broncos, Packers at Lambeau. It's like, that's a great weekend. So when it comes out today, tonight, you can start to kind of put those things together. 90% of the time, you never do them, right? It's just fun stuff to talk about and, you know, start texting around with people. But I think it's a great day.
No,
I think it's fun.
I love it. And we're going to get back to it, but I got to take us away from it right now, James, because we do have an update on Jerry Jeudy.
Broncos breaking news.
This is from the Arapahoe Sheriff Department. They put out a tweet. This is as special as it gets. So Zach Bye was all over it. From the Arapahoe Sheriff Department, professional football player Jerry Jeudy has been arrested by Arapahoe County Sheriff deputies. He's being held at Arapahoe County Jail on charges of second-degree criminal tampering with a domestic violence enhancer, a misdemeanor. He's on a no-bond hold. He's innocent until proven guilty. Okay, I got to break that down. There's some language in there that, quite frankly, I'm not sure I've ever even seen before. Maybe we need to even get an expert on to help us out with this a little bit, James. But not a traffic deal. Not
no.
This is definitely a serious situation. You know, there's two different charges going on here. There's the second-degree criminal tampering with a domestic violence enhancer. I guess that's only one charge, but I'm just trying to process that. A second-degree criminal tampering with a domestic violence enhancer.
Well, my interpretation of that, and you know, we'll continue to look into this, is my guess is you could have second-degree criminal tampering that had nothing to do with domestic violence if I was criminal tampering on, I don't know, some charge you had with me, right? But then if you do second-degree criminal tampering with something related to your significant other.
I break, hold on. Back up just for a second, though. But I mean, treat me like I'm an idiot because I am. Tampering. When I hear tampering, I think I took your cell phone and I broke the cell phone. I took some evidence.
Correct.
And I tried to get rid of that.
You're messing with evidence.
Okay. So that's what that implies. But then it's followed up with a domestic violence enhancer. So there was a domestic violence situation that Jerry Jeudy might have been trying to cover up. Is that what that means?
Yes, that's how I'm interpreting it. How I'm reading it is this tampering charge.
Yeah, let's be clear. We are not legal experts. We're trying to figure this out like anybody else.
Right. We're talking our way through it as we get the information on the fly. Is that there was some sort of tampering with evidence in a in some sort of a case, and it had to do with something that had a domestic violence kind of attachment to it. So it was with a significant other of some sort. It wasn't a an issue between Jerry Judy and some random guy at Starbucks or something, right? Like it was somebody that he had a relationship with. So that gets added to the charge. Is it's that charge of criminal tampering, second degree criminal tampering, and it had a domestic violence enhancer, which means that's added to the charge. That's how I'm interpreting it. We'll, you know, certainly
he's on a no bond hold. So that means he can't pay his way out. Is that what that means?
Yeah. That
doesn't sound good.
But it also seems strange to me for a misdemeanor.
Yes, I agree. When I see misdemeanor, I don't think that this is the worst case in the entire world. But when I see he's on a no bond hold, that confuses me. We will get an expert for us. But I just want to make that clear. I'm sure Andrew knows what he's talking about, but that was not somebody that we could verify exactly what their background is.
Yeah, no, we'll find somebody that Dan Jacobs is a judge. We'll round up somebody like that who could come in and maybe support what Andrew just shared with us. I'm not doubting what he said. He sounded like he knew what he was talking about, but we can't necessarily verify all of that. But he did say the no hold bond is standard, so there's as though there's some sort of red flag with that. So we will continue to dig into this situation as time goes on and see what else we can figure out. But it is trickling in as we go along here and kind of dealing with it and fielding it on the fly, Tyler.
Yep. There's going to be a lot to process here. There's a lot to figure out. And I'm sure we'll figure out the majority of the details here, but there's a lot that we will not. The biggest deal is that, unfortunately, Jerry Judy is in the news for stuff that he doesn't want to be in the news for.
Yeah, and, arrested, never good, right? We talked about it when we were in with Stokely and Zach. That's not why you want to be in the news. I guess if you're looking at it on the scale of things, right, it could be, awful, and it could be, well, nowhere near awful. And when you hear misdemeanor, it makes you think, okay, well, that's closer to nowhere near awful. But then you hear the domestic violence enhancer to it, and that puts it closer to the other side of it, so it's kind of ping-ponging back and forth.
I mean, unfortunately, the bottom line is we're in very gray territory where we have no clue. We still don't have any clue what really happened or how dangerous it was. So we'll do our best to not speculate on anything other than the facts that we know. We'll try to connect some dots here, but we're going to have to live in a little bit of gray area without fully understanding the details here for a little bit.
So some news coming down from the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office. We'll get an expert on to help us break it down and get through the legalese so we know more of what that means here as the afternoon goes along. All right. The Avalanche, what are the expectations for them moving forward? Where is the pass-fail line? We'll answer that question coming up next.
You're listening to The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Tyler, we're continuing to follow the Jerry Judy story. Just recapping, he's been arrested by the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office, been charged with second-degree criminal tampering with the domestic violence enhancer. We will have Judge Dan Jacobs on at the top of the hour to help break that down and go through some of the legalese for us as we navigate the story this afternoon. All right, so the Avs are in kind of waiting period here, right? Trying to figure out, hey, who are they going to face in the second round? Is it going to be the Blues or the Wild? Blues have a chance to close out that series tonight at home. I don't know that you necessarily want to get in the business of, hey, which opponent would you rather face, right? Because I learned my lesson for this time on that front, Tyler, back in 1996. It was, the Jaguars? Second or third year team.
The most famous example you could ever think of.
Right. It's like, that's who you want. They're coming in here 9-7. It took a missed extra point in the final game of the year for them to even make the playoffs. That's, of course, who the Broncos want.
Yeah.
We all know how it went. They came in here and upset Denver in the divisional round. That taught me my lesson.
You know what?
Like, just don't root for
Don't root for it to go anyway.
I totally agree with that. I've actually got a preference of who I hope the Avalanche play.
So do I.
But it has nothing to do with who I think is the best matchup. I want the Avalanche to play the Wild because I just want. I think it's a cool story. It's a matchup that's got a lot of history. It's like a little mini rivalry that's been going on between the Avs and the Wild. I feel very confident in this Avalanche team. It's not that I'm dismissing the opponent at all. I'm just saying strictly from a fan's point of view, that would be the most compelling matchup for me to feel like I'll be emotionally invested no matter what, but it's just got a little extra layer to it, right?
Yeah, I think if you're just looking at it from a storyline standpoint, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a better matchup. I think that series has a better chance of going further and going deeper, which makes for more compelling games and more drama. I don't want any part of Fleury. I think that's a goaltender that's in the Avs' head from last year when he was with Vegas. That's the kind of guy that can stand on his head and steal a couple of games. He makes me nervous.
Well, and it's a guy that we were associated with this year.
Right. So yeah. that worries me a little bit. So I guess after my whole Jaguars preface there, I'm rooting for the Blues today because, you know, I think back to last year and, okay, it's a four-game sweep and the Avs won 2 out of 3 over St. Louis this year, so I'm kind of leaning that way. But
I got to talk to you here. I'm going to take the driver's seat for 1 second,
okay,
if you don't mind, because I wanted to bring this up with you today because, you know, you've obviously not been shy of your opinions about Michael Malone. You've not been shy of your opinions of Jared Bednar. And I wouldn't say that you've got the same opinion of both of those guys. But your opinion of Michael Malone, it kind of evolved as the year progressed. It was Teflon Mike. You were being tough on the guy. You finally got to the point where he's not the guy. You don't want to be the Nuggets coach anymore. Look, I think it's insane to think that Jared Bednar will be on the hot seat at any point this year because I just don't believe they're going to lose in the second round. Plain and simple, I don't think they're going to lose. I suppose if they do lose, there's a conversation to be had. But I'm wondering for you, is it not as simple as just getting past the second round? Is there a different marker that you would say that's the pass-fail line that, okay, Jared Bednar, you've got one of the best teams, and maybe the best team in club history, seriously, in terms of in-season performance, and you did enough with it. What is the line that you would say, okay, I'm not calling for the job of Jared Bednar?
Well, I think getting past the next round is the bare minimum. I think if they don't do that, I think you have to make a change. If it's 4 straight years losing in the second round, the last two going into the playoffs as the prohibitive favorite to win the cup, and you get upset in the second round 2 years in a row, I think you're not going to blow up the core, right? And I think it'd be naive to say, well, it's going to be different next year. Well, why? So you have to change something, and I think you change the head coach. Jared Bednar's outlived the average lifespan of an NHL coach by about threefold at this point. So the fact that he survived this far is, you know, he's defying the odds.
Yep.
So that's the bare minimum. I think it from there on, though, it kind of depends on how it looks, right? So if you go out and you get swept in the Western Conference Finals, probably has to go. If it's something like last year where you just collapse, right, where you got a couple of wins, and whoever you're facing, I don't know, pick a team. They're playing Calgary, and Calgary makes an adjustment, and you got no answer, and you go from up 2-0 to out of the series in a 5-day span, I think you got to go.
Look, this is going to drive you nuts. I get it, because you've got a standard. I get it. If you don't live up to standard, then you didn't live up to it. Dude, even if they lost in the second round right here, I would not want Jared Bednar fired.
Why?
Because this is have you not seen all the good stuff? Have you not seen all the great stuff? Have you not seen a team that went out there and absolutely dominated from week one all the way, maybe not the last week of the season, but they dominated throughout the entire regular season. It's as good as it gets. I mean, this is as good as it gets.
No, it's not. It gets better. No. The parade is better.
No, it's hard. And every now and then you lose a game in the playoffs, even though you're a better team.
I'm not saying they have to go 16-0.
When I've got a team that is dominating the way that the Avalanche have been dominating all year long, the last thing I want to do is upset that apple cart.
Well, sometimes
I don't need to turn that thing over.
Sometimes the apple cart needs upsetting. Right? Yeah, sometimes it does, and it's the same argument and same analogy.
Probably not after a year in which you're the best team in the world.
Well, they were the best team in the world last year, too. They won the President's Trophy last year. This year, they didn't officially, but they took their foot off the gas for the final 2 weeks, lost 6 out of 7 and missed it by, 4 points? So you win 2 of those games, you're back-to-back. So they were the best team in the world a year ago. They're the best team in the world this year. I think you can make that argument. There's no excuse. So if Jared Bednar can't win with this group – because they're not going to keep them all together, right? Kadri probably leaves. If you can't win with this group, who can you win with? And at the end of the day, it's all about what you get done in the postseason. I think Jared Bednar and Michael Malone are very similar from the standpoint of, I think they were great coaches to come in and take over bad teams. They both did, and get them to very good.
No, you can't compare Jared Bednar and Michael Malone.
I think they're very similar.
No, you can't compare it. Because Michael Malone, he has never done what Jared Bednar has done.
Michael Malone, if you want to talk about playoff, it was in the bubble.
But here's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something entirely different. Michael Malone has never had the best team in the NBA. He's never had that. Jared Bednar has for 2 years, basically. And this year, he's done it from start to finish. So he has created something. He's not just taking a team from bad to good. He's taking a team to the best. Michael Malone has never done that.
Wait a minute. I think that, first of all, I'm with you. Michael Malone's never had the best team in the NBA, which makes it all the more inexcusable if Jared Bednar can't win it. Certainly if he can't get to the Stanley Cup Finals or get to the Western Conference Finals, like, that makes it inexcusable. But how much of that was Jared Bednar's doing? I mean, Nathan MacKinnon was the first overall pick in the draft. They got a lot of top five picks on this team. I think you can make the argument for Michael Malone and developing, and he and his staff developing Nikola Jokic, who was 41st pick.
Yep.
Michael Porter Jr. was a 14th pick. Jamal Murray was a 7th pick. Like, I think there was more of building with that group, and I still don't think that gives them a free pass than they've had with Jared Bednar. Man, unless something weird happens, right? Like, let's say the Darcy Kuemper injury had been catastrophic and he was out for the rest of the playoffs because of an eye injury. That would probably have bought him a year. And it's like, well, if you lose your goaltender for basically the entire playoff run, it's hard to hold him accountable. Short of something like that, it's pretty much Stanley Cup Finals or bust.
Here's the thing. I mean, the old saying, like, just middle of the game, just keep shooting, right? You put enough shots on net, eventually something's going to go in. You apply that same logic to, you have the best team enough years in a row, eventually you're going to win. Look, I can't guarantee you the Avalanche are going to win the Stanley Cup this year. I can't promise you that. I think they're going to get close, and maybe they will win it. But I do know this. You've got a lot better chance of winning the Stanley Cup when you've got the best team than you do if you're going to reset it. So if you were to reset things with Jared Bednar right now, there's only really one thing that could happen. You could marginally get better. Like, marginally, maybe you're going to get over the top, but in all likelihood, you're probably going to set things back, and you're going to go backwards, because now you've got a new coach, you've got a new philosophy, you've got new everything, and that just is going to take a team that's already the best in the world and just set it back a little bit. So my philosophy is, if you've got the best team in the world, yeah, it might be disappointing if they don't win the Stanley Cup back-to-back years, or if they had early exits back-to-back years. But if you keep the best team together long enough, eventually that's going to pay off.
I just look at it, and yeah, it may set them back in October and November, and maybe they're not the best regular season team next year. But again, you don't throw parades for raising a President's Trophy banner. That's not what we all get to go downtown and celebrate and play hooky from work. And I guess my counter to that, Tyler, would be, had the Bulls just stuck with Doug Collins, did they win 6 titles? If the Lakers had just stuck with Del Harris, did they win those 5 titles with Kobe? We don't know the answer. It's a hypothetical, but I do think, you know, Phil Jackson made a difference. I think in both instances, right? I do think having a coach who is a great postseason coach matters. And Michael Malone and Jared Bednar, and they've done a ton of great things. Like, if you're just putting together the bullet points of accomplishments as the Avs head coach and as the Nuggets head coach, it's a long list.
Do you believe in them or not? Do you believe that they're going to go this year?
No.
Do you believe they're? You don't.
Because I think it's blind faith.
All right. I got a coffee bet right now that you will not have an opportunity to even call for Jared Bednar's job. Even you will see, by the time that this playoff is done, you're going to be at a point where you realize they are just too good. I can't call for somebody to be fired of a product that's that good.
Okay. Well,
you're stubborn enough. You might call it for his head no matter what.
No, I won't. I'll be honest about it. Like, if they go to Game 7 and lose to Florida in Florida, I'm not going to say he should be fired just to try to win the bet.
All right.
We'll keep it honest.
Put it in the ledger, fellas.
You'll know it when you see it. If I'm being honest on it. All right. The Jerry Jeudy story has dominated the first hour of the show. It's the biggest news of the day. We will get our own Dan Jacobs with us to break down what all the legalese means. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.